Okay, we're starting our new semester, saying this for the benefit of our internet friends who are listening, who will be listening to this class on the internet, hopefully. This is our first class of the winter semester. The title of the session is Women in Tanakh. I just want to give you a quick overview of my goals in this in the next 12 weeks that I hope to accomplish. We're not going to talk about all the women in Tanakh right now in these 12 weeks. What I'd like to do is focus during these 12 weeks on the Imahot. Ach v'rak, only on the Imahot. So I envision spending about 3 classes on each aim. So this week we're going to start on Shara. And in generally, the 3 aspects of each aim that we're going to be focusing on is first her as an individual, and her as a wife, and her as a mother. So her relationship with her spouse, her relationship with her children. So those are the three topics we're going to be discussing basically on each aim. So we're going to start tonight with Sarah. But before we start, I'd like to ask you a question, a thinking question, as we like to begin that way. I want to play a little word association. Give me qualities, midot, that you think are appropriate for an aim that we call an aim. I don't mean just a regular mother. I mean one of the imahot. What are qualities that we would expect her to have?
Kindness. Compassion.
Kindness, compassion. Good. I'm just repeating it for the recorder. I want to make sure we're on the right. Yeah.
Kindness, compassion.
Modesty. Humility.
Tzniut.
Tzniut.
Loyalty.
Loyalty.
Understanding.
Mm-hmm. Understanding.
Patience.
A lot of patience.
Mainly patient.
Mainly patient.
Like any mother.
A sense of focus and truth.
Excellent. Sense of focus and truth. Maybe even a sense of humor. Yes, no, maybe?
Yeah.
No, maybe.
Definitely.
As an aim?
Especially if your husband has 3 other wives.
Okay. definitely be talking about that. Okay. Now let's think of, we're now in the 21st century, well into the 21st century. 21st century values valued in a woman.
Patience
again.
Always say more. Always
say. That's it?
Yeah.
Assertiveness today, okay. Assertiveness back then as an aim or not?
They had to be. Look at Russell.
Okay. We'll be looking very closely at Raphael. She's one of my favorites. Rivka? Mm-hmm. All of them. Sarah? Here, Avram, take Hagar. Okay.
The ability to multitask.
Okay.
What?
Nowadays or back then
nowadays.
Or both? Nowadays, multitasking. Back then may not have been as necessary.
He also had a sense of selflessness.
Back then.
Back then.
What about now?
I don't
know. Is the model woman of the 21st century selfish. Or somewhere in between.
Probably somewhere in between, depending on the individual.
Depending on the individual, depending on the situation.
Right.
Depending on and whose model you're looking at.
Uh-huh.
And why didn't Sarah stand up for her rights when he wanted to pebble her off?
We'll talk about that when we talk about her relationship with her spouse next week. Not this week. What other qualities of the 21st century woman?
Ambition.
Drive.
Energy.
Gotta
have a profession.
Profession.
To be noticed.
What about, is that it? Okay, to be noticed. Good. Are these all the qualities that fit, you think? Or you think we can push it a little
strength.
Bit more?
Strength.
Emotional strength or physical strength?
Both. But more so emotional, or they wouldn't be dieting.
Or they wouldn't what?
Be starving themselves.
Ah, dieting is one of the qualities you're saying of a 21st century woman is dieting.
Diet.
For what?
Is that
goal?
To look skinny so you can make somebody else feel happy.
Ah. To look skinny so someone else can be happy, yes.
Is that considered a quality?
It's a quality. When you think of the model 21st, what's considered today universally, as stereotypically universal as we can get. Maybe not you personally, but what the world values.
She should be unselfish.
A little selfish, okay. She should also, one of the things that Bhagavan said is that she's dieting. One of the things that the model 21st century woman does.
Yeah, you can take it a step further. She's got to be skinny.
Okay, got to be skinny.
All right.
And sexy.
And sexy.
And very easygoing.
Mm-hmm. Spend a lot of money on makeup.
All things to all people.
All things to all people. Good. Spend a lot of money on makeup.
Yeah.
On clothes. Mm-hmm. Looks for sales. Probably. Looks for sales. That's how they
are.
Thrifty. Makeup, hairdos, jewelry. These qualities of the, when we think of the average or the, not average, the quintessential, let's say, the quintessential 21st century woman.
You're saying materialistic.
Not only, but also.
She's got to be on the move, you know?
Okay. Moving, not sitting with her feet up. Okay. But when we started, and I led you in this direction a little bit, we started saying that one of the characteristics of a quintessential 21st century woman are physical characteristics of her jewelry, her makeup, her looks, her dieting, her shape, her size, and things like that.
And standards.
General. Just society's standards.
Well, materialistic is one of them.
Is one of them. Right. But not the only, not even the most important.
That's not an
but one of them. But it's one of them. One of the admirable. Why not? And see, a woman who takes care of herself versus a woman who doesn't take care of herself, the regular 21st century person will automatically look towards, if they want to get something done, will automatically look towards a woman who looks like she's taking care of herself.
Right, but
as opposed to one who doesn't, because she's more competent, she's more driven, she's more ambitious, she's more focused, maybe a little selfish. Mm-hmm. We know she'll get the job done. Whereas with the imaho, the physicality never comes up.
And it's not necessary to be married either.
To be married. Right, 21st century, exactly, 21st century. You know, single career woman. Okay.
But obviously, looks were important because look how many times it's mentioned as Robert.
Okay. But we wouldn't think that this is a quality that is a quality of one of the imahos. I'm going to give you each their two sheets. Today they're not double-sided. Oops, sorry about that. They're not double-sided. Okay, thank you. Okay, the title of the class was supposed to be changed from the age of beauty to age versus beauty, but whatever, it's close enough. Okay, so we're going to talk this evening about Sara, and as you already mentioned, one of the qualities that we know about Sara is that she was beautiful. What else do we know about Sara?
Do
you know that Sara was one of only four women whose deaths are listed in the Tanakh? Sara, Rachel, actually there's a fifth one. Sara, Rachel, Miriam, Devorah, and Divla. I think her name was Divla, something like that. Rachel's nursemaid. No, Devorah was her name. Rachel's nursemaid, Devorah. Okay, so we're going to look at the 11 prakim tonight that cover, 12 prakim that cover Sarah's life. Sarah enters at the end of Perek Yud Aleph, which is the end of the Parshat Noach, and she leaves at the beginning of Perek of Gimel, the beginning of the 23rd Perek, with her death at the beginning of Parshat Chayei Sarah, which has always fascinated me, but the whole Parsha is 12 Sarah's life, when really what is the whole Parsha talking about? The aftermath of her death. But it's still referred to as Chayei Sarah. Okay, let's give a brief overview of Sarah's life. Where do we start from? We start from her introduction at the end of Perek Yud Aleph. We can start from Pasuk Chavav. Sarah lived 70 years. He gave birth to Abram and Nachor and Haran. I'm on page 50 and 51. Haran gave birth to Lot. Haran died in the lifetime of Sarah's father, native lands, and Orchazim. Abram and Nachor took for themselves wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nachor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the wife of Milcah and the father of Yiscah. And Sarah was barren. She had no child. By the way, we have this information about her. Sarah took his son Abram, and Lot, his son of Haran, his grandson, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of Abram, his son, they all left Orchazim to go to the land of Canaan. They came to Haran, they settled there, and Terach, at this point, the Torah tells us at this point that Terach died. It's not necessarily clear that this is when he died before the Lech Lecha command happened. Fine. Now we have Avram at this point is in Haran. Hashem says to him, Lech Lecha, go to Eretz Yisrael. So he picks up his whole family, and they go to Eretz Yisrael. Then Pasuk Yud, I'm on page 56 and 57, Pasuk Yud of Parashat Bet, there's a famine in the land. Avram goes down to Mitzrayim, and here we really have the first real encounter which Sarah plays some kind of part in the story, but she still plays a very interesting part. The story goes as follows. Vayihira av ba'aret. There's a famine in the land. Vayered Avram Mitzrayim, Avram goes down to Mitzrayim, Lagorsham to live there, to chaved hara av ba'aret, because there was a really strong, bad famine in the land in Eretz Yisrael. Vayihikasher, he kriv labo Mitzrayim, he's coming close to Mitzrayim. Vayomer Asara Yisto, he all of a sudden turns to his wife and says, Hinei na yadati ki isha yifat mar'at. Behold, now I know that you are a beautiful woman. Okay.
What took him so long?
Excellent. Vayakir Yeruotaka Mitzriyim, when the Mitzriyim see you, Baramu Ishtozot, this is his wife, they're going to say this is his wife. They'll kill me and they'll keep you alive. He's not telling her what else they'll do to her. He's just telling her they'll keep her alive. Imreina achotia, tell them you're my sister. Laman yitavli ba'avarech, so that I will have good done to me, i.e. not lose my life, on your behalf. V'chaitana shibiglaleif, and I will live because of you. V'ahikibo abram mitraima, it comes to mitraim, v'ruha mitraim et ha'isha, ki yafahi ma'od. They see that the woman is very beautiful. That your uotash sharei paro, paro's officers see her. They halaluotal paro, they praise her to paro. Vatukachai shabei paro, they bring her to the house of paro. Ulavram hitiv barura, Avram, as he expected, got good things on her behalf. Vayhilo chonu vakar vachamarim vavadim uskachol vatanor vamalim. He got all these great things. He got chon, he got sheep and cattle, and chamarim are male donkeys, and servants and maid servants and female donkeys and camels. You know, there's a joke I have to tell over here from Rav Cooperman, who used to be the dean of Mechola in Yerushalayim. He always says, do you know that the male donkey in Hebrew is called a chamor and the female donkey is called an aton? Why is the female donkey called an aton instead of a chamora, which you would think chamor, chamora, we have par, para? Why is she called an aton instead of a chamora? Because she doesn't want everybody to know that her husband's a chamora. And then he would literally put his tongue in his cheek. You know, like that. Like a tongue in cheek. Answer. Okay. Ve'inagah Hashem et paro nega'im gedolim. Hashem punishes Paro in a punishment so that he understands why he's being punished. That they told his whole house, al-jabar sarai eshet Avram, because they took Sarai. Vayikrah Paro la'Avram, Paro calls to Avram, Vayomer, Ma zot asita li, what are you doing to me? Lama lo higanata li ki ishtachai, why did you tell me she's your wife instead of your sister? Lama amarta achotihi, why did you tell me she's your sister? Vakachota li lishai, why did you take her from me as a wife? Vatahi ne ishtachai here, take her, kach balif, take her and get out of here. Vayikrah la'Av Paro anashim, Paro put men on him to make sure he would leave. Vayishalchu tov et ishto et kol shelo, they sent them out. And the beginning of Parak Yud-Gimel, now they're leaving Mitzrayim, and they go and they have this whole interlude with Lot. So that was so far the first story in which Sarah played some part. What was the part that Sarah played in that story?
She was the central passive figure.
She doesn't say anything. She doesn't do anything. Just like in Lech Lecha, when Hashem told Abram, pick up your whole entire family and leave where you were born and go to this new land, Sarah seems to say, okay, she goes along. Now, at this time, Avram says to her, Sarai, I'm sure that they're going to kill me, and I know you're really beautiful, but if I don't say that you're my sister, if I say that you're my wife, they're going to kill me, and they're going to take you. Please lie and say that you're my sister. We could talk about that when we talk about Avram. Like, what's this lying going on? He's Avraham, and you know, say that you're my sister instead of my wife, and she says, okay, whatever rocks your boat, hon. You know, whatever needs to get done, I'll do it, all right. Fine. So she goes along, they come back, they have the whole fight, Avram and Lot. And then you have chapter 14 is the fight of the four kings and the five kings. Then,
why was Paro punished because of this?
Why do you think?
I mean, he was innocent in this whole deal.
He seems to be innocent, right? But at the end of the day, figuratively and literally, what he was about to do was a forbidden act.
Also, he didn't ask permission from even like Avram, who's supposed to be the brother or whatever. He didn't ask permission, which should be like a courtship. He would have asked permission from the man of the house if he'd take the wife. The Torah doesn't say that either.
But he does give him good things. He gives him good things. If Avram didn't want it, he could have said, no, thank you.
Right.
You know, I don't want it. But that is a good point, that it seems to be also that the Mepharshim talk about that there was a custom that if she was married, that they would kill the husband. And if she wasn't married, they would ask the brother. So it does seem that maybe he wasn't asked, although from the fact that he's given good things, it's very possible that
he might have been asked and said, okay, obviously.
Right, you know, I mean, he took the stuff.
So,
well, it says here he took it because he didn't want to rouse his suspicions.
Could be. Okay. All right, so we're moving along here. The beginning of Parashat Vav of chapter 15. So after this, now Hashem comes to Avram and he says, don't worry, Avram, I'm going to take care of you. Everything will be good. This is the famous Brit Ben Havtarim, the covenant of the parts where Avram has to take these different animals and cut them in half and line them down and walk in between. And God says, I'm going to make you a great nation and things are going to be good for you. And then things are going to be really, really, really bad for you because all the people are going to go down to a foreign land. They're going to work there. But at the end, I'll take them out and things will be good again. And don't worry. And I'll take care of you. And Avram the whole time realized he's sitting there without a child. And God is telling him he's going to make a great nation come to him. And Avram's like, huh? Okay. Moving along. Now we have the beginning of Parashat Zayin, chapter 16, which we'll be talking about extensively next week. Sarai realizes she has no children, and she has borne no children to Avram, and this whole story has just happened where Avram was promised that he would have a whole nation after him. And Sarai says, here, take Hagar, and we will talk about next week. And that is really the first time, though, that we see her being proactive. Again, we'll talk about that next week. Then, okay, Avram is 99 years old. Hashem comes and says, Avram, you have to make a bris. Fine, so he makes a bris, and he makes a bris on Ishmael also, who's 13. Then we flip to more pages. Chapter 18, page 79. Avram is sitting, he's sick. Abraham at this point is sitting, he's sick, and God comes to him, and he says, okay, I'm coming to visit you, and you know, do Bikur Cholamash, he says, to visit the sick, and inquire after your well-being. And Avram is sorry, and says, quick, make these foods, and she makes these foods, and we talked about that last semester, how she made the food, and then it wasn't served, and then whatever. But in the end, so she's listening behind the curtain, so to speak, she's sitting and listening, and the angel says, oh, Sarah's going to have a child. And she laughs. She's like, what are you talking about? Avram is too old, and I'm too old. This is not going to work. And here we have the famous story where Hashem lies to Avram and says, well, what Sarah said was, I am too old. That she didn't say that Avram was too old. Okay, we're going to speed this up a little bit. I know this is like already fast, but we're speeding up a little bit. Then we have Sodom being totally destroyed. Then chapter 20, we have a repeat of the story in Mitzrayim, but instead it happens in Gerar, where he says again to Sarah, now it's very interesting, I noticed something, and I was reading it over today. Okay, here we have the same story, but different. Abraham journeyed from there to the region of the south, settled between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned in Gerar. Abraham set up Sarah, his wife. She is my sister, so Abimelech came up to Gerar and took Sarah. What's missing from this story that was in the story of Paro?
He didn't ask her.
And what else doesn't happen?
Avram doesn't get rewarded.
Doesn't get rewarded until the end.
Paro, he got punished.
Both of them got punished. Abimelech and Paro both get punished. But here, there's no mention of the people noticing that Sarah was beautiful. He just takes her. Now, it could be that the Torah assumes that you know the story already, but then why do we need all the other details? But I think what happens, well, first of all, if you realize she's 99 years old, 90 years old at this point, and pregnant. Not so beautiful anymore. Okay, moving along. Then we have the Abimelech story, chapter 21, Yitzchak is born. And Sarah again takes a front seat at this point, and she sees that Ishmael is not treating Yitzchak nicely, and she says to Avram, take this guy out of my house, it's not appropriate. And Avram listens to her, and then God tests Avram, he brings Yitzchak up, ties him up, and says, Avram, I want you to bring him up and make him on this altar, and then he doesn't have to kill him in the end. And then in the beginning of Parchov Gimel, when Yitzchak is 37 years old, Sarah dies at the age of 127, and that is Sarah's life in 10 minutes or less. So now let's look at Sarah from the back, from the end of her life towards the beginning of life. And I want to take a moment and look at the Rashis that you have in front of you. Look at Rashi number one. What does the Medrash tell us about Sarah? Because Sarah does seem like a very assertive woman, even sometimes an aggressive woman, a woman who knows what she wants, and also she knows when to hold them, and she knows when to fold them. Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
I think so, like that. Thank you. Okay. All right. Source number one, Rashi, by you, Chaye Sarah. Rashi asks this question. When Sarah dies, the Torah says as follows. Sarah's lifetime was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years, the years of Sarah's life. How would you write that? How would you write that? Sarah was 127 years old. End of story. What do you need 100 years and 20 years and 7 years? So Rashi answers as follows. For this reason, was the word shana written after every item, lamar lecha, to tell you, that each term is interpreted individually, the 100, the 20, the 7. That mea, that kub, at the age of 100, kivat chaf lechait. She was as innocent as a 20-year-old in terms of her sins. In other words, she had as few sins as a 20-year-old would have. Ma bat kaf lo chata, just like a 20-year-old doesn't have any sins upon her, sha'arei eina bat onshin, because she is not old enough to be held responsible for her sins, is at this point that a person is held responsible for their sins at age 20. So that's like a 20-year-old is starting with a clean slate. So too, Sarah was at age 100. Okay. Afbat kuf belochei, also at 100 she was without sin. Uvat kaf, when she was 20, kivat zayin liofi. It was as if she was 7 in regards to her beauty. The first interesting thing about this midrash is, would you associate beauty with a 20-year-old or a 7-year-old? You want to say a person so beautiful. Yeah. And if you want to talk about childlike innocence, would you talk about the 20-year-old or a 7-year-old?
7-year-old.
So it's interesting that the midrash seems to flip them.
Yeah.
But there are pages and pages and pages about that, and we're not doing that now. You could look it up. And I'm happy to show you where it is. Fine. That's source number one. Number one, we have this source that Sarah is both innocent in terms of sins, and she's beautiful. The utmost in beauty seems to be age 7. Okay. She's beautiful, pure. How I want to skip at this point, actually, to source number 6 on the next page, because it's, I don't want to leave you hanging on that one. Source number 6 on the next page. What does that mean?
She was beautiful at 100.
She was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. As a 7-year-old was. Mm-hmm. What's the beauty of the 7-year-old? In source number 6, because Kuni, who interprets much of what Rashi says, and is found in many Mikro Gedolot, says as follows. Though Parish Rashi further explains that Esrim Kivat Sheva Liofi, when she was 20, she was like a 7-year-old in her beauty. Piresh, to explain, Haita Yafa Belo Kacho V'Sarok V'Parchos. Kshehaita Bat Esrim, she was beautiful without eyeshadow, lipstick, and blush.
Mm.
When she was 20. What do 20-year-olds do in order to beautify themselves? Well, there was a clinic bonus sale last week. That's what they do. This is what they do. They put on makeup. They put on jewelry. At that time, it was appropriate for women who were 20 years old and of that age to beautify themselves, to put on makeup, to put on jewelry. But she was as beautiful as a 7-year-old who has no need of artificial means to enhance her beauty. That's how beautiful she was. Pretty beautiful. Source number one. Source number two. Hine Nayadati. Again, we're moving backwards. The first time when they're about to go down to Mitzrayim. They're about to go down to Mitzrayim. Now, we raised this question. What do you mean Avram didn't know that she was beautiful? They were married for quite a few years before then. They've been through quite a lot. So Rashi gives three explanations. Number one, Midrash Agada, an Agadic interpretation. Ad Achshav, lo hikir ba mitoch tzniut shebishnehem. He didn't recognize, he was not aware of her beauty because of the extreme modesty of both of them. Ve'achshav hikir ba'al yedei ma'aseh. And now he recognized her beauty through an incident. And there are different midrashim that tell different incidents of what happened. That all of a sudden, that she was unclothed for a particular reason, and all of a sudden he recognized her beauty, because before then, there were points when he wasn't exposed to that aspect of her because of their tzniut. Davar acher, another interpretation. Min had ha'olam, it is the custom of the world. Sha'al yidei torach ha'derech adam mitbazeh, that through the troubles of travel, a person becomes uncomely. Vizot amda b'yofya. And she, Sarah, remains with her beauty. Last week we took a trip, a really, really long trip. I can tell you that no matter how much makeup I put up in the morning before the trip, I look disgusting, not by the end of the trip, by an hour into the trip. I was wearing my yucky jean skirt and my yucky sweatshirt and my snoo that I don't go out in, and like, just, and forget the kids. I mean, it had nothing to do with the kids. It's just because when you travel, you get tired. You know, and I was in a rest stop, and a woman walked in dressed to the nines, like beautiful, looking like she just came from work with her makeup on her. She was just going to work. She really looked, and I looked at her. It was like in the middle of Ohio. You know, like, where are you coming from? You don't look like that when you travel. You don't look like that when you travel.
Because you don't. It's not comfortable.
It's not comfortable, but also, even more than that, particularly at this time, think of it this way. They're going from Eretz Israel, from the land of Israel, to Egypt during a famine. Mm-hmm. What makes it a famine? Chances are it could be that there was also a drought, but there was no rain, and that's why things couldn't grow. So the sand is sort of dry and really yucky. You go 5 minutes in that, you're covered head to toe in dust. It's like walking in Manhattan. Yeah. When we first got married, I was always wondering, how come every day I have to wash the sink? That there's like a film of dirt over the sink. That's what it was like, all the time traveling. And here, Sarah, he looks at her and he says, oh, you are still beautiful. After all this traveling, you don't look like a shmata. You look perfect. That's what he says to her source. Opinion number two. Upshu told some advices, and these are nice things, and they teach us good messages. But here's really what I think the crux of the issue is. Now is the time when we have to worry about your beauty, when your beauty means something more than just between you and me. Now is the time when other people are going to be noticing your beauty. And you can ask the question, wait, I thought Avram and Sarah were the big converters, I always call them the first NTSY advisors of the year. They really had quite a lot to do with a lot of people. So how come all of a sudden now they're meeting people who are going to notice her beauty? Says Rashi, Yadati zeh yamim ramim ki yifat marah. I knew for many days already, for a long time I knew that you're beautiful. V'chshav anu ba'im bin anashim shechorim mechoarim. We're coming now among people, and we all know that in different climates, people's skin isn't only a different color, but people's features are also different shapes. So we're coming now into an area in which people look different than the people that we're used to, and you are going to stand out. You're going to look different than anyone. Acheim Kushim, they're brothers of the Ethiopians, Lohur Galubi Ishayafa, they're not accustomed to a beautiful woman. It brings to my mind the scene from The King and I. Mm-hmm. Maybe The King and I, when she comes in with the big dress, mm-hmm. and all the wives of the king are like looking under her dress. You know, she looks like something unusual. Here she's, you know, there are these Asian Oriental women, and she's this English woman with very different features than they are, and she's very beautiful to them, and she's very curious to them, and that's what Sarah's coming into now. That's what I'm saying. Now we have to worry about it. It's not prejudice as much as saying that they look different. They're not used to seeing you looking this way. And what's interesting is to think of it in terms of, also you have to remember, first of all, that Rashi never saw a black person.
But it says right here, black and ugly people.
Right. Ugly, referring, comparing to her, that, okay, you're right. I wouldn't use the word ugly. I would say looking different.
What do you say about mean from the Hebrew?
Mechorar means ugly. That's what it means. It means ugly. Yes.
He doesn't say ugly black people. He says black
and ugly people.
It's the two separate instances.
Yeah, but they seem to be two descriptions of brothers of the Ethiopians. Yeah. We're trying to put 21st century interpretations on stuff that was written by people who very possibly never saw black people.
But is he talking about ugly as in looks or ugly as in meals?
No, looks.
He didn't know they're meals yet.
Physical looks.
He knew what they
would do. He knew that he knew what they would do to him.
They're ugly.
But it seems like he's talking about physical features.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Source number three that we know about Sarah. So far in source number two, we know something about Sarah's beauty, either that just she looks different from everybody else, or if you go by that second interpretation, she was so beautiful that her beauty withstood the difficult
trip. Great hours of
travel. Yes, thank you. Okay, source number three. On the tip of my tongue. Source number three. For source number three, I need you to look back, please, at the source itself, which is Perikid Aleph Pasuk Chav Tet, which is when Sarai is first introduced. Vaikach Avram and Nachor lahem nashim. Avram and Nachor took for themselves wives.
What page did you call it?
Page 50 and 51. I think I saw a family tree. Did I see a family tree here? No.
It was a family tree.
I saw a family tree.
Yes, 77.
Wonderful. Okay. So, okay, here we go. Very interesting. Okay, this is according to Rashi. All right, so Terach has three sons, Avram, Haran, and Nachor. Okay? Avram and Nachor marry women. Shem Eshet Avram Sarai, Veshem Eshet Nachor Milcah. Avram's wife is Sarai, and Nachor's wife is Milcah. But Haran, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, Avi Milcah v'Avi Yitzchak. The father of Milcah and Yitzchak. So here, let's say this again. Avram and Nachor married women. Avram married a woman named Sarai. Nachor married a woman named Milcah, the son of Haran, the father of Milcah, and Yitzchak. Who is Yitzchak? And why do we need to know that Haran is her father? The Midrash assumes as follows, that Avram and Nachor, brother and brother, marry sisters and sisters. And another name for Sarai is Yitzchak.
Did Haran marry his niece?
Haran is dead.
No, did
Abraham, no. Yeah, so it would seem that Nachor and Avram both married their nieces.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. How did Lot come about?
Lot was the child, was Haran's child also that was born beforehand. It seems, right, it seems that how come Lot isn't mentioned here? Lot is mentioned actually in the next pasuk, but he's not mentioned here because which further supports the idea that Yitzchak is Sarah, because otherwise what do we need to know about Yitzchak for altogether? There has to be the connection there. But Rashi quotes two Midrashim as follows in source number three. Yitzchak zo Sarah. Yitzchak is Sarah. So why is she called Yitzchak instead of her name Sarah? Al shem shesachta beruach hakodesh, because she looked into the future in holy inspiration. V'shehakol sochin beyofya, and all looked at her beauty. Again, we have two aspects of Sarah introduced to us: the spiritual and the physical. That she was beautiful, and that she had ruach hakodesh. And the continuation of the Rashi is, Ba'od Yitzchak, another meaning of the word Yitzchak, is Lashon Nisichut. It's translated here as dignity, but a Nisicha is a princess. Kimo Sarah, like the name Sarah, Lashon Sarara, which also means ruling over, having dominion over, like a princess. So Yitzchak is Sarah. Okay. So now we have these two ideas of Sarah, and they're really echoed in the Gemarot that I brought to you as follows on the page. We're going to start with source number four. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. Arbat nashim yefefiot hayu ba'olam. The four most beautiful women who ever lived are as follows. Sarah, the Abigail, thank you, David's wife. Rachav.
Oh, she's a prostitute.
Yeah, she's also known as Yehoshua's wife.
Yeah.
The Esther, you know, it's amazing. You can't shake some reputation. The Esther. And Esther, and if you look in Esther, Esther won a beauty contest, right? She's the most beautiful of all. But actually, if you look in Esther, and we'll talk about this when we get to Esther, there's a further quality to Esther that the other women didn't have. that she made her extra beautiful. So yeah, Tanu Rabbanan, Arbana Shemnu Fabiot Yubalam, four most beautiful women in the world, and who's the first one who's listed?
Sarah,
most beautiful. Fine. Source number 5. Va'na'ara yafa admod. At the end of David's life, at the beginning of Malachim death, Malachim Aleph, at the end of David's life, at the end of David's life, he gets very old and he gets very cold. And a search is done throughout the kingdom for a mechamemet, for a woman to come, a young woman to come and lie with him, simply lie with him to keep him warm. The Gemara tells us very interesting of difference between when Ahasuerus was looking for a wife and when David was looking for a warmer. That when Ahasuerus was looking for a wife, everybody ran to hide their daughters. And when David was looking for a warmer, everyone ran to push their daughters out to say, take mine, take mine, take mine. So Avishag HaShunamit is the one who was chosen. And her description is, the Navi describes her, V'hana'ara yafa ad ma'od. She is beautiful. She's very beautiful. Amar Rabbi Chanina ben Bar Papa. Now, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa here is in a long list of things. He's talking about the word ma'od. The word ma'od means very in Hebrew. He's talking about incidents in which the same description is given for two things, but one time the very is there and one time it's not. So here he has, in this situation, Adayin lo higia l'chatzi yofi shel Sarah. That is, beautiful as she was, wasn't even half as beautiful as Sarah. It's ad ma'od below ma'od bichlal. It says ad ma'od. She was beautiful until very, not very. How is Sarah described? Right here in on page, the beginning, Perkin Bet, that's so good, Bet Yud Gimel. Keep missing it. They saw her, Vamru, the Kisha Yafatmera, they saw, Vahikavar, Ram, the China, Pasukizav, your Uham, and Shirim, and Taisha, Kiafahi Ma'od.
No Ad
Ma'od. Kiafahi Ma'od. Sarah's the most beautiful. Avishag didn't even come to be half as beautiful as her. Fine. Source number 6, we did already. We explained about the beauty of Sarah when she was 20. She was as beautiful as the innocent 7-year-old who doesn't need any makeup. Fine. So we have sources to support that not only was Sarah a beautiful woman, but she is very possibly one of the most beautiful women who ever lived. Most beautiful. Would we usually think about that? What do we do with that? Like, that really isn't a quality that we would necessarily prize. Somebody here, I don't remember where it came from, we're talking about materialism as a quality of a 21st century woman. Someone here said, but it's not a positive quality. Here we're talking about a very material quality. Sarah's being praised for being beautiful. First of all, did she make herself beautiful?
No, she got it from Hashem.
Right. She was born that way. Maybe she's born like that. Isn't there like an ad like that? Maybe she's born that way? Maybe it's Maybelline. So she was really born that way. She didn't need the Maybelline. So, but she's praised for being beautiful. Not only that, not only did she not make herself beautiful, but Hashem made her beautiful. I mean, beautiful of all the qualities that we could praise Sarah for. They're talking about her as beautiful? Like, that's what you pick? What about vivacious? What about assertive?
Or modest.
What about passive? What about modest? What about all those other things? But she's spoken about as beautiful.
Maybe she was beautiful on the inside, too.
But the point is, she was only the outside beautiful.
Yeah,
it was only the outside. So that's the material part. So let's shelve that for a moment. We'll come back to it. There's another major quality of Sarah that's presented in the Midrashim as well. Source number 7. Sheva Neviot. There are lots and lots of Nevi'im, of people who had prophecy. There are 7 Nevi'ot. 7 of them were women. Maninu, who are they? Sarah, Miriam, Devorah, Hannah, Abigail. Gee, someone here showing up twice. A couple people showing up twice. Abigail, Huldah, the Esther. Notice that 3 out of these 7 women are also on the list of most beautiful. They didn't make it into people, but they made it into Megillah. Okay.
Sarah Dichtiv. How do we know that Sarah was a Nabiyah, was a female prophet? Avi Milka b'Avi Yitzchak, as it says, the father of Milka and the father of Yitzchak. V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak said, Yitzchak zo Sarah, Yitzchak is Sarah. The Lamani question my Yitzchak, why is she called Yitzchak? She'sachta b'ruach ha'kodesh, that she looked forward in ruach ha'kodesh. And Ne'amar, as the Torah says, as Hashem says to Abraham, kol asher tomari lecha Sarah shema b'kola. When Sarah tells Abraham, kick Yishmael out of the house, and Abram turns to Hashem and says, what should I do? Abram says, listen to your wife. And the Midrashim explain it, saying she has Ruach HaKodesh. She knows what she's talking about. She's a Nevi'ah. She gets prophecy. So listen to her. So that's a proof that she's a Nevi'ah. And the second part, he continues also why she called Yishka, because everyone looked at her beauty. But we're focusing now on the spiritual part of her. Now we know that she's a prophet. She has a special relationship with God. Not only is she a prophet, source number 8, Rabbi Yochanan b'shem Rav Lazar, the Rabbi Shimon, lo matinu shedibyar hamakom im isha ela im sarah belvad. Usually, almost any time that God speaks to a person, he doesn't do so directly. He almost always does it through an emissary, through a malach, through a messenger, which we translate the word malach as angel, but we're not talking angels with wings and halos, we're talking Malach, which literally means messenger. We're talking about a messenger from God. That's how God always speaks to people. How does God speak to Sarah? Directly. There's only one other person who we know of. Who else do we know of who God spoke to directly?
Moshe.
Exactly. Pe'o pe'adaber bo. He says, I speak to him directly. So now we're starting to see, not only is Sarah a Nevi'ah, but she is on the highest level of Nevi'ot. Not only that, we could possibly compare her in her prophecy to Moshe. Mm-hmm. Hold this thought. Flip all the way to the end. Moshe dies. Last 8 sukkim of the Torah. I'm on page 1122. And we'll flip over to the English side. Verse 5, 1123. So Moses, servant of Hashem, died there in the land of Moab by the mouth of Hashem. He buried him in the depression in the land of Moab opposite Baal Peor, and no one knows his burial place to this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye had not dimmed, and his vigor had not diminished.
Wow.
Interesting. Now I want to introduce you to verse number 9. Keep this here. Now we're going to pull down our beauty of Sarah, combine it with our highest level of Nebuah from Sarah, put it all together with Moshe Rabbeinu, and here we come to our conclusion. I'm bringing you in source number 9 from the Gur Aryeh, which is a commentary on Rashi. Nechama Leibowitz calls it a super commentary. Super not meaning great, but super meaning like a superscript, like something on something else. It's a commentary on a commentary. So it's a commentary on Rashi. It was written by the Maharal, Rabbi Yehuda Lau, who lived in Prague in the 18th century, the 17th century. He is of the Golem fame. Those of you who are familiar with the story of the Golem, the story is ascribed to him. The Im Tomar, here's what he says, and I apologize that it's in Rashi print, but I only have the black print for Bamidbar and Devarim. I don't have it for Bereishit yet. The Im Tomar, Lama Meshabeach Otah HaKatuv B'Yofi. Why is the Torah praising Sarah in her physical beauty? So Halo Ketiv, doesn't the Tanakh later on say, Sheker HaChein? What do we say every Friday night? Sheker HaChein V'Hevel HaYofi. Beauty is falsehood, is nothing. Beauty is skin deep. What's the most important thing? Isha Yirat Hashem, a woman who fears God, who's in awe of God, a woman who keeps the mitzvot, she's the one we focus on. She's the one we want to emulate, and she's the one we hold in high esteem, not the woman who's beautiful. So why are we focusing on beauty as a positive attribute of Sarah? V'ner el lomar, z'kara lo aire b'yofi, rak mipnei sha'adam hu mechubar mishnei chalakim. The only reason that the Torah is describing her beauty is because man is made up of two components. Miguf v'nefesh, of a body and a soul. V'higid l'cha ha-katsuv, the Torah is telling you, Shasara haita shleima b'chol elu hashnei chalakim. This like sends shivers up my spine. I think it's so cool. The Torah is telling us that Sarah was complete in both of her parts. V'lo haya b'chisaron im shleimud haguv v'im shleimud ha-nevesh. Haita shleima b'chol elu hashnei chalakim. There was no lacking, nothing missing from her. She was a totally complete creation. That when she was 20, she was like a 7-year-old in her beauty. This beauty, it was not a natural beauty. Or the way that normal people are. Yoredet shows al shehaguf hu nati, that her body was clean v'hu bahir, and it was clear mibli siag, with no limitations. It was a complete and total body, the most possibly complete physical creation that could possibly be. K'moshe timtza eser Moshe Rabbeinu. We find the same thing with Moshe. Lo ka'ata eino v'lo nas lecho. That his eyes didn't dim and his vigor had not diminished. Shegam zeh moreh behirut haguf. This also shows the clarity of his physicality. Umashayta bat kuf kibat kaf. In the part of the midrash it says that when she was 100, she was as innocent in her sins as a 20-year-old. Yoreh, this shows al ma'alat hanefesh, on the elevated quality of her soul. Vihinei hata shleima b'kol. She was totally and completely complete.
Wow. In other words, perfect.
1 second. In other words, perfect. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Not. Which is why she has to be presented as not, because she wasn't. Okay. She was a completely complete being. And this is a description of Sarah also when she dies. That the Midrash gives to her, tells us about her when she dies, that Sarah was not just a complete physical being, but also a complete physical being. So now let's apply this, you know, because you always have to take a message from it, because that's really the point of Midrash anyway, to take a message for ourselves. We spend all of our lives focusing on our spiritual well-being, spiritual and emotional well-being, meaning, including laundry, meals, food shopping,
yuck,
cleaning house. All those things are spiritual, I say, because there are things that need to be there. I mean, they sort of need to be there minimally, but we always like to take it a step further. We like it to be special. We focus on these things. We focus on that. We focus on our davening. We always talk about focusing on our davening, right? So here, focus on our davening. Let's learn more. Let's study more. Let's do all these other things. Let's focus on other people. Let's do more chesed. Let's do all that stuff. What is this telling us? You can't forget about yourself. Because if Hashem made us, Hashem didn't make us malachim. He didn't make us completely spiritual people. He also made us people who have a guf, who have a body. Now, that doesn't mean that the body part has to overcome the neshama part. But remember it this way. And this really, it came to my mind again in our last class of last term when Mr. Ben-Hayun was here with the wine tasting. It really brought it home. This is something. Wine is something that you make a bracha on, right? Aside from using it for kiddush, even when you have it at a regular meal, you make a bracha on wine. You make a bracha on everything. But when he was here with the wine tasting, it made us appreciate that what we were making a bracha about. Now think about our bodies. Our bodies are holding the most precious thing possible. Our neshamas. If you don't take care of our guf, the neshama will have no place to go. And the neshama can only complete its job by doing mitzvot. And the neshama cannot do mitzvot without a guf. So bottom line, ladies, go get a manicure. Have a good week, and don't forget about yourself.
You like...